Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
So, Bill, here on July 7th, 2024, what do you have for us?
Well, we have our sponsor this first hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, right up there off I-5. You can't miss them. They've got everything you need when it comes to John Deere Ag products. They've got the mini small tractors. They've got mowers. They've got side-by-sides. Got a pretty good inventory right now. Plus, they have a pretty good supply of all your lawn care, your riding electric mowers, courtesy of California. Got a great inventory right now. If you're looking to buy a new mower, go up and see them. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at PapeMachinery.com.
Nice.
There you go.
So, we haven't done any shows on marijuana for a while. Bill actually ran into someone at work who wanted to know why. Oops. So I called our friend Officer Joe, and I said, "Hey, you know what? We're having people who have questions." And then the Supreme Court decision came out, and that was a no-brainer. Had to talk about it. So do you want to do our lead-in on Dave?
Well,
or would you like me to just read his bio?
Oh, because his bio is extensive. Let's read his bio.
Yeah? Well, I made it kind of short. Okay, how about this? I'll do it, and then whatever I left out, all the fun stuff, okay, you feel free and do. Sorry, my microphone's very squeaky today. Sounds like I'm working on a pirate ship. David Evans is senior counsel for the Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators, CIVEL, who educate lawyers on how to make the marijuana industry accountable to their many victims. Mr. Evans was a plaintiff's litigator in personal injury and employment law cases. Attorneys who desire more information can contact him at senior counsel@civel.org, and I have all of this on the website. So before opening his law practice in 1992, he was a research scientist in the Data Analysis and Epidemiology Services Unit, Division of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, in the New Jersey Department of Health. Interesting change of careers. He analyzed legal and regulatory requirements regarding drug and alcohol abuse, research and data collection, courts, criminal justice, domestic violence, drug-free workplaces, juveniles, confidentiality, treatment, drug testing, AIDS, drug use forecasting, and discrimination. So he's kind of been there and done that and was sort of a natural for this. Very exciting. And so you have worked with him a lot.
So in the marijuana prevention business, Dave is a rock star. He has put together a team of attorneys around the United States, and he's going to speak to this, not me, where they are looking for litigants to file cases against corporations, dispensaries, cities, towns, and states for the harm that marijuana is doing to their communities. And I'm going to let Dave speak about that. And he's, of course, going to speak about the Chevron decision today.
Yes.
And I'm going to let him talk about that.
So for people who are unclear at how marijuana might be adversely affecting your community, you, your neighbors, your kids, you can go to wethepeopleradio.us, and up top we have a tab labeled POT. Just regular old pot. And on there, there are tons of pictures. There's information about pesticides. There are lots of interviews. We have a lot of interviews. They stretch back. So we've spoken with lots of people, doctors, no candlestick makers, but butchers and bakers, I'm sure. So we've hit everybody on this topic, and there is a ton of stuff to be had there. You should be kind of wising up on this at this point. I think the ship has sailed that this isn't the magical wonder drug that it was sold to everyone.
Well, let's talk just for a second before we bring Dave on. Let's just tell the people of Shasta County what marijuana has brought to Northern California. So let me go down just a list of items just off the top of my head that I can think of. Human trafficking, water theft in the million gallons a day, electrical theft, property code violations, sex trafficking, child abuse, kidnapping, animal abuse, murder, including cartel murder.
Lots of animal abuse, too, just in case you don't care about the rest of it.
And I'm going to be doing a documentary, Dying for Your High, which is going to be just about the animals.
Nice.
Let's see. Impersonation of peace officers right here in this county. We've had them do impersonate DEA agents as they rip off grows.
Wow.
Crimes such as armed robbery, burglary, rape. And that burglary includes stealing large pieces of farm equipment for use in the grows. Dangerous conditions for surrounding neighbors and farming livestock. Who wants to be next to a pot grow today? Hazardous damage to our environment. We see clear cutting of our forests. We just had one of those occur in eastern Shasta County. Loss of wildlife using banned pesticides, which I'm going to talk about today. Honey lab explosions. We've had a lot of those, including we took down the largest honey lab in Shasta County history last year that was in two 40-foot cargo containers, and there was enough ether on site that if that had ignited, it would have burned down eastern Shasta County. There would have been no way to stop it. Heightened community fear, drugged driving. Now the statistics are 1 in 5 fatal accidents are attributed to marijuana. We have increased addiction, mental health, welfare, hospitalizations from overdoses by underage kids, using edibles, homelessness, and suicide. Now it's being tied to both of those, and obviously we have that problem here.
Finally.
Importation of illegal guns and other drugs through a transnational cartel-controlled pipeline. We are still controlled in this county by the Sinaloa cartel. However, the Chinese and the Hmong are making inroads here. This marijuana trade supports known felons on parole. And one of the things I'm going to talk about today is supplying tainted marijuana into dispensaries and an unknowing public. And there are articles out there now saying that marijuana in the state of California 100% is tainted with something. Not necessarily a pesticide, but tainted with something that's going into the dispensary and going into unknowing consumers' bodies. And we'll talk more about that.
And that's supposed to all be tested prior to sale and retail, isn't it?
Well, it's supposed to be all tested, but it's actually batch testing. So, and we also know there's a lot of lab shopping going on now, where they're seeking out friendly labs that will give them a nice clean test, so that they can pass.
What handy is that?
That's for money. You know,
yeah,
that's for money. We'll talk about that in the second hour because I don't want to take Dave's thunder.
So the Chevron decision was a Supreme Court decision from last week that we were excited about in Northern California, because Chevron has contributed. It was a deference to the agencies. So if they wanted to steal water from our farmers up on the Klamath, and the lawyers for the water district went up against Fish and Wildlife, for instance, the deference went to Fish and Wildlife. If they said the science shows we need it, it was basically a done deal, and that was the end of the show. So we were excited from that standpoint up here that maybe we could get a handle on some of our natural resource abuse.
Because they reversed that.
And yes. And then Dave put forward this terrific article about how that may affect marijuana going forward, so I won't say any more about that. It's all you, Dave. Uh-oh.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for this opportunity. I appreciate it. And just so you know, I'm up in the Adirondack Mountains in New York right now, and it's cool here. We actually needed a blanket to sleep last night for all of you people sweltering.
Yeah,
it was 120.
Thanks for rubbing it in there.
120 here
well,
yesterday.
You know, what can I tell you? Anyway, the case is Loper Bright Enterprises versus Ray Amando. And it's a U.S. Supreme Court case of June 28th. And what the Supreme Court did is they said that we are basically throwing out the Chevron case. This was a 1984 case where if a case gets to federal court regarding a statute or the authority of Congress, the first thing the court would do is look at whether or not Congress had spoken to the precise question at issue in the case, using tools of statutory construction. In other words, they would look at a law, and the first thing they would ask is, well, was Congress clear Congress was clear that would be the end of it and the court would decide. If it was ambiguous, if the statute was ambiguous, then the court was required to defer to the administrative agency's interpretation of the statute as long as it was there was some reasonable interpretation. It didn't have to be the proper interpretation.
Yeah.
It just had to be one that, you know, at least could be reasonable. Now, what has happened since 1984 is that these power-hungry agencies who want to do whatever they want, if you're a MAGA Republican, they're called the deep state, would interpret things the way that they wanted to, that gave them the maximum amount of power. And the federal courts were bound to go along with their interpretation as long as it was at least there was some reasoning behind it. And this created a lot of abuse. It made Congress lazy in the sense that that they left it up to administrative agencies, which they knew were deep state agencies, to make the interpretation. And the Supreme Court said, look, this really hasn't worked. We've tried this for decades now. It really hasn't worked. There's been too much debate about what, you know, ambiguity meant in a statute. It's allowed for overreaching of power. These agencies started doing things that Congress really hadn't authorized them to do. I can remember I was involved in advocating before the FDA concerning drug testing, and people in the FDA wanted to kill drug testing. They assumed a lot of power there that had never been given to them by Congress. So what the court said is, look, this isn't going to be the law anymore. An agency is going to have to prove their case. They're going to have to be persuasive, just like anybody else would have to be persuasive in the court. The court is now going to look at whether or not they've engaged in a reasoned decision-making within their statutory boundaries for deciding what is and what is not a proper interpretation. So what is going to happen is I think they're going to revert back to what's called the Skidmore deference, which does not afford, this is a case, Kezor versus Skidmore, Kezor Skidmore versus Swift, which is a 1944 case that said that that the courts are not going to afford an agency's interpretation any special weight. Rather, they're going to look at, is the agency's interpretation persuasive based on a number of factors, such as the thoroughness of the agency's consideration and consistency with earlier pronouncements. Now, what does this have to do with rescheduling? Well, in a way, Chevron helped us before because the DEA and HHS relied on Chevron to defeat requests for marijuana rescheduling. They came out with an opinion, the court went along with that under Chevron. So at first glance, this may seem to be not helpful to us because we actually used Chevron when we had an administration and a DEA and an FDA that was anti-marijuana. I can't say that's the case anymore. I can't say that there is any ethics left in the FDA or HHS when it comes to marijuana. The DEA, I think, is begrudgingly being dragged into rescheduling. They don't want to do it. The head of the DEA, Ann Milgram, who, when she was Attorney General of New Jersey, was in favor of medical marijuana, But the DEA is, you know, putting out signals, is, look, we don't want to do this. Send us information to convince us that we don't have to do this. So the things that are going to be looked at now.
Hold that thought, Dave, so I don't interrupt your list. Yeah. Because it is really important for people to understand that this isn't just a foregone conclusion.
No, not at all. And
it's worth fighting for.
Absolutely. I think we have a very good chance of doing it.
See, we haven't heard that in a long time. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Our guest is Dave Evans, and we're talking about the Chevron decision that the Supreme Court just made and how that might affect the scheduling of marijuana. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Box song ringing in my ear. The next thing you know, the bartender's pouring, shots are flowing, got me stoning. All I really know is that I should be going, but I'm soaking up the moment. I'm all jacked up, all jacked up. Don't believe I've ever had this much. One thing I've learned, when you get tore up, time sure flies when you're all jacked.
Up all night selling cocaine and hash to an undercover cop who had a sister named Jan. Her reasons unexplained, she loved the monkey man. He was a Boy Scout, cause he went to be a man. Found out the hard way, nobody gives a damn. You know that they found freedom just across the Jersey line. Hopped into a stolen cop on Highway 99 when the walls came down.
I could never resist that. That was the Headstones, a punk band from Canada, and the singer plays the character of the sheriff on Yellowstone. Season a million comes in, November 10th or something? So you can watch the guy who sang that?
He got killed.
Oh, yeah, they bumped him. He's on some other show.
Yeah.
Anyway, trivia. Continue on, Dave, with our serious subject.
Hey, Dave, I'm looking at Biden's selection for the FDA, Dr. Robert Califf, and apparently now as the commissioner of the FDA, he wants to reschedule marijuana and cannabidiol as well. So that doesn't bode well for the fight. But over to you, sir. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, there's two types of employees in the federal government. There are civil service employees, and then there's politicals. And politicals are people appointed by the president, and some of them approved by the Senate. And those are the people that are really making the decisions here. The attorney general is apparently in favor of marijuana. The head of HHS is the former attorney general in California. He's very pro-marijuana legalization. Admiral Rachel Levine is the one that wrote the HHS document supporting this. She is a political. She now calls herself a woman.
Yes.
But she converted from being a man back in 2011. And she ordered nursing homes in Pennsylvania to take COVID patients, and I know this because I own a nursing home in Pennsylvania, and we wound up getting a lot of sick people as a result of that. But she moved her own mother out of a nursing home.
So she had deep belief in what she was doing.
Well, anyway. So this is really a political move. Now, on one hand, Chevron helped us when we had a friendly administration, because that opinion of that administration was given deference under the federal law. Now that we have a hostile administration, Chevron, getting rid of Chevron is going to help us, because the courts are no longer going to automatically defer to the administrative agency. So people like Dr. Levine and the head of HHS and the Attorney General and the DA are going to have to make their case in court, and it's going to be subject to an examination by the court. So I think we have a very good chance. The courts now, I believe, will look at the factual premises of the agency's expertise, the thoroughness in their consideration, the validity of their reasoning, is it consistent with earlier and later pronouncements, and the practice of the government. Now, what I find very interesting, if you look at the earlier and later pronouncements of the DEA, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and HHS, in prior years, they've all said that marijuana is very dangerous, okay, including the FDA. So now they're reversing their position, and we're going to use all of their earlier statements against them. And when I wrote to them about rescheduling, I said, I'm going to sue you, and you better get ready for it. And I'm going to use your prior statements about how marijuana is dangerous against you. And I suggest that you not engage in that process. Now, at the time when they came out with this thing about rescheduling, Chevron was still the law. It is no longer the law. So now we're going to be able to go to court. We're going to be able to contest what they're doing. Now, what are they doing regarding rescheduling? Well, they decided that marijuana has current accepted medical use. And they have decided this on two things. There's a two-part inquiry to this. It is full of holes. It is blatantly political. It is ridiculous, and it is embarrassing that the federal government is doing this, and I'll explain why. First of all, the first thing they have to look at is whether licensed health care providers have widespread current experience with medical use of marijuana. Now, that sounds good, except that they don't really define current experience. Does that experience mean clinical experience? Does it mean negative experience, positive experience? They just have to have experience.
Yeah. And, does that mean they smoke pot in college? Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the questions that we're going to ask, and then, by the way, the Office of Legal Counsel for the Department of Justice was obviously given the job of, you know, you write up a legal opinion that says that we can do what we want to do. Okay, so this is what's going on in this legal opinion. This was written by a guy from Harvard Law School. It is embarrassing what he did. It is sloppy. It is blatantly political and unreasonable. So what they're taking the position is you got to have this widespread current experience. The second part of the inquiry is whether or not there's some credible scientific support for at least one of the medical uses. At least one. So in other words, if there is one medical use for marijuana, then it is going to be applied to all medical potential uses of marijuana. So that's their reasoning. Okay. So if you find that marijuana helps you with chemotherapy nausea, then it's going to help you with asthma and pneumonia and a wide variety of illnesses. So this is a blatantly irresponsible approach.
Yeah.
And what do they mean by widespread current experience with medical use of the drug? Well, what they said is, well, look, you know, there's a lot of states that have medical marijuana. There's 30,000 doctors in those states that have, you know, been authorized. So, therefore, that is widespread current experience of medical use. Now, there's been no studies done on the outcome of that medical use in those states. So, have they had negative problems? We know, for example, that the American Heart Association just came out and said that people who use pot have a 25% higher risk of cardiac incidents, strokes, and heart disease. Has that been reported? There's been no studies on any of that stuff. With glaucoma, smoking marijuana can actually cause you to damage your optic nerve. If you're on blood thinners, marijuana can cause you to bleed. If you're about to get surgery, you have to stop using marijuana because you can get excessive bleeding. It can increase autism scores. We've put together a look at 36 impacts of marijuana use on medical conditions. You can get that at aalm.info, aalm.info. It's for free, and it's called Risks of Marijuana Use. So there's no attempt to analyze any of this experience and to look at positive, negative. They just have to have the experience. Okay. There has been no clinical experience because the state laws only require a doctor to recommend marijuana, but not to have clinical experience with it. And there's a big difference between the two. So this is where they're going. So there's no real definition for current accepted medical use. And what do they mean by marijuana? Marijuana is can be anything, but it certainly can be the dried leaves of marijuana. And so smoking the dried leaves of marijuana can now be considered a medicine. No medicine is smoked. No FDA medicine is smoked because smoking is inherently dangerous.
Because that makes no sense.
You cannot titrate the dose, and that's why nothing is smoked. But yet they're saying, yeah, it's okay. If some doctors recommend it, we think that it's okay. So they go on to say that it has to be a licensed healthcare provider, but they don't define licensed healthcare provider. So this is a federal legal opinion. So I looked at how licensed healthcare provider is defined under federal law, which is what they're going to be stuck with. Okay? This includes nursing facilities, hospitals, home health entities, blood centers, ambulatory surgical centers, pharmacists, laboratories, therapists, and anybody or any kind of therapeutic clinician. So now we have people with no experience as physicians per se are going to be able to use this stuff.
Dave, let me give you an example, and you can tell me whether these would fall under that category. How about an LVN, licensed vocational nurse? Can go ahead and recommend marijuana, yes or no?
I would think so. It includes therapists and practitioners, and under federal law, those are physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, nurse specialists.
How about a marriage nurse, family counselor?
Yes, absolutely. That is a therapist and practitioner under federal law.
How about people who stayed at the Holiday Inn Express?
Midwives, social workers, clinical psychologists, a dietitian, a nutrition professional, a marriage and family counselor, a mental health counselor, are all practitioners, healthcare providers and practitioners that could be included. This is very sloppy not to define this.
Dave, a county social worker who's hired off the street to give you benefits could all of a sudden say, yeah, we're going to give you marijuana too.
Well, that they are under the definition under federal law of a health care provider.
Wow.
And this DOJ opinion says that it could be for licensed health care providers. So that's sloppy. That is very sloppy not to further define that. Okay. And then when they get to define experience, they don't. Does it have to be positive, negative? They only say it has to be current. Well, what does that mean? They don't define current. They don't define experience. Have you used it one time, two times, three times? And there, it does not require any experience in dosing. You know, if you're going to use the medicine, you have to show studies regarding the frequency of administration, duration of administration, route or method of administration, age, weight, and sex factors. I mean, you prescribe a drug based on age, weight, and sex factors. interaction with other medicines or foods, risk for children, risk for geriatric people, risk for other drugs, all of this stuff they can ignore now. Okay? And if there's experience with it, we can forget about all the rest of the stuff. We can let bud tenders at marijuana facilities now advise people on dosage. There's no dosage information like this for marijuana in any way, okay? And does experience have to do with the quality of the marijuana? Well, no, okay? We don't have to look at the composition, purity, and concentration of the marijuana, all of which varies. Marijuana has more than 100 cannabinoids in it. There's not going to have to be anything about that. We're not going to have to do clinical trials of people with pre-existing mental disorders, renal impairment, epilepsy, cardiac conditions, and so forth. Now, they say that there's got to be experience, and it has to be under state medical licensing organizations. No state medical licensing organization has ever, to my knowledge, put forth a statute or a bill in the legislature to legalize marijuana for medicine. However, they are required to do it by bills that the legislatures have passed. So what they're saying is that if a state medical board is doing this, it must be okay. But these boards have all been forced to do it by the legislature. None of them have ever volunteered for this. So again, they're using a very unfair standard. They're also not requiring any warnings in the experience in deciding what has a current medical use. You all know that when you go get a prescription drug from a doctor and you get the package insert about that drug, there's a whole page and a half, 2 pages of warnings and all this kind of stuff. There will not be any warnings required about patient counseling information, pediatric use, geriatric use, pregnant women, marijuana use causes birth defects, underweight babies. It causes men to not be productive in producing sperm. There is not going to be any requirement about adverse reactions, dosage, and so forth. So this is extremely, extremely reckless thing that they're doing. And by the way, this then becomes the model for other medicines. So if some pharmaceutical company wants to get some drug approved, well, instead of spending $1 billion on going through the FDA process, they can spend $200,000 getting it passed by a state legislature. And that's exactly what's happened with medical marijuana. We go in and fight these bills, and there are, you know, $10-12 million donated on the other side to get this stuff approved as medicine. That buys a lot of dinners at politicians, events.
Yeah, it kind of gets everybody used to the idea, and then everyone goes, well, that worked out. Let's just go a little further. We have We have to take a quick break here again. Sorry.
Okay.
It is 20 minutes till. You can always tell what time it is. It's 20 after or 20 till. And you're listening to We the People. You can find all of this, and I did put that that guide on there for you. It is on the website at wethepeopleradio.us. Well, we can't hammer the Rachel Levine deal enough. So, back to you, Dave.
Well, okay, now the other thing that they have come out with is that they say that one of the things that they're going to consider is favorable clinical studies of medical use, and whether, and this is a quote, whether qualified expert organizations have opined in favor of medical use. Okay, they're going to consider that. But then in the same opinion, they say that no professional medical organization currently recommends the use of marijuana. And so they're going to rely on expert organizations, but they acknowledge that no professional medical organization supports its use. So who are they going to go to? They're not going to go to the AMA. They're not going to go to the American Heart Association. They're not going to go to the American Glaucoma Association. They are going to go to organizations that they consider to be experts on this subject, because no medical organizations are going to back them up. So I put together a list of who I think these organizations are going to be. I think they're going to be the Alliance for Cannabis Therapeutics, the American Civil Liberties Association, the American Alliance for Medical Cannabis, Americans for Safe Access, Coalition for Rescheduling Cannabis, the Drug Policy Alliance, the Marijuana Policy Project, Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, and so on and so on.
Wow.
That's where they're going to go, okay? Because they don't have any medical organizations that are backing them up. Now, the problem is that they are rejecting the prior very reasonable methods for deciding if something is a medicine. They in the past had to consider eight factors, and under the FDA rule they had to consider five factors. The reason that they don't want to consider these anymore is because marijuana cannot get through those factors. There are not adequate safety studies, there are not adequate well-controlled studies, and the scientific evidence has to be widely available, and so forth. They don't have that for marijuana, so they're making up something that they think that marijuana will be able to pass muster in, which is these very vague, not well thought out problems. Now, this is, when we go to court on this, and we're going to, if this thing goes through, we are going to point all this out to the court. We have submitted very well-reasoned volumes of information to all of them, showing why this is a really bad idea, what they're coming up with. On the issue of marijuana contamination, for example, the marijuana industry in New York did an analysis of marijuana products produced in New York after they legalized it, and they came up with the opinion that it's not healthy, it's not safe. And even the states that regulate marijuana and have done so for a long period of time continually come up with product recalls due to contamination, pesticides, heavy metals, and so forth. That's the nature of the plant, cannabis, to produce these problems. The other thing that I tell legislatures, and I told this to the FDA, is that people that are in the marijuana business right now are criminals. They are violating federal law. And what do you expect criminals are going to do when you, in quotes, legalize this? You think they're going to obey your laws? No, they're not going to do it. And they haven't been doing it. They've been allowed to get away with murder, and they have literally been able to influence the political aspects of the government through money, and that's why I think what we have to do to them, we have to do the same thing that was done to tobacco and the opiate industries, is sue them, okay? Because there you can go toe-to-toe with them in court. They have to prove their case under the rules of evidence. Government has become too corrupt, too influenced by this, too influenced by politics in deciding medicine. And we have to take them to court. And we plan on doing that.
And without the Chevron deference standing as a factor, now that that's gone, how much of a game changer is that for what you would have been doing anyway?
Good. Yeah, I think it's a big game changer because they're now humming their own petard. They supported Chevron at one point in defeating rescheduling, and they were using the Chevron deference this time to say, well, we're the agency, and, you know, we're right. And the rules have now changed, and they can't really use it anymore. They're not going to get the deference that they got before. Now they're going to have to really prove their case. The evidence is so overwhelming that this is dangerous, and that their approach is so reckless. I would be shocked if the court doesn't give us a fair hearing on it. I think they're going to. We're probably going to file the lawsuit in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Louisiana, because we'll be able to file the lawsuit pretty much anywhere. You asked me also to talk a little bit about lawsuits in general, if I may, just for a few minutes.
And Dave, before you do that, I have a statement from one of our professional that called in, and he wanted to just tell everybody that it's also Health and Human Services that's pushing that. That's Xavier Becerra, and he's from California,
right.
And he's been pushing this, and none of us will show deference to Robert Levine ever. If the man can't figure out his sexuality, he certainly shouldn't be advising all of us on what we should be putting in our
Don't
body.
Don't make me play the song again.
Oh.
Okay.
Dude,
no, well, the only thing that I can tell you is that I hold him personally responsible for some deaths in our nursing home. And a lot of some of our employees got sick, and we could not allow them to go home to infect their families, and we took care of our own staff at our nursing home. We had pretty much kept it out of our nursing home and protected our patients.
Dave, before we run out of time, we do want you to talk about an anatomy of a lawsuit.
He's our hostage next hour for the first part, aren't you, Dave?
Can you stay over, Dave,
oh, sure.
for the next hour?
Oh, sure.
We'll have a good hostage situation.
All right. Well, great. Then we have more time.
Anyway, as far as the lawsuits go, I've given up on government to be responsible. The biggest problem we have with lawsuits is people still think of marijuana as not being very harmful. Okay. And so my organization, CIVL, Cannabis Industry Victims Educating Litigators, that's CIVEL.org, has been working on educating litigators and promoting lawsuits. We have a lawsuit in New Jersey right now where people in a town objected to having pot stores come into their town, and we're suing the town. I'm working on a case also where a marijuana grow operation was going to be put next to somebody's house. We have a lawsuit going there. We have a lawsuit going in New York against their marijuana legalization laws. We're about to file a lawsuit in New York against the state government. They want to spend, and this just blows me away, absolutely blows me away, they want to spend $200 million setting up pot stores in New York.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Getting them rented, getting them set up, getting the equipment, and then they're going to turn them over to people that are, in quotes, justice involved, people that have had prior marijuana convictions. Or their children. So if your dad got busted for pot back in 1960 and you're his child, you are a justice-involved individual and can get one of these stores. Now, you have to pay the state back, okay?
Right.
But what other business gets their store set up for them and financed by the state government? But yet this is what they're doing. This is how crazy this
yeah,
is.
Yeah, no kidding.
And so, and Minnesota is doing the same thing. New Jersey is doing the same thing. So we're coming in saying, look, that's illegal under federal and under state law. As taxpayers, we're also going to file a lawsuit against public smoking of marijuana, and to give people who live in apartments the right to be free from marijuana smoke in their apartment, because it stinks up a whole apartment building. We also have a personal injury lawsuit going in Michigan right now of a young man that had Crohn's disease, was advised to use medical marijuana, became addicted to it, and his family wanted him to get off marijuana. Rather than get off marijuana, he committed suicide. This is a common occurrence. This is a common occurrence. Rather than get off marijuana, people have chosen suicide. We have at least four cases that have been brought to my attention about this. Marijuana completely takes people over, body and soul. And rather than face life without it, they choose to not face life. And that is criminal that the marijuana industry is allowed to get away with that. I'll give you another example. In New Jersey, they wanted to pass a regulation that that any marijuana that was over 40% THC had to have a warning that it could cause psychosis. Okay. So I wrote to them, I said, can you name any other product approved in New Jersey that causes psychosis? And of course there is none.
Right.
Okay? So you can still sell it over 40% THC, but you just got to put a warning on it that you're going to become psychotic if you use it.
Is that under their medical label? I mean, is it still?
No. Well, it's recreational. It's legal in New Jersey now, but this
recreational
is the kind
psychosis.
Of crazy stuff. This crazy stuff that's going on right now with this, and so what we're looking for. There is also a lawsuit that we applaud in California right now, where a young man became psychotic and is suing the pot companies. We're going to probably file one in New Jersey or Louisiana pretty soon. We're looking for plaintiffs, people who have been damaged by marijuana. People, for example, that had no prior mental illness or have a mental illness that's been exacerbated by marijuana on the psychosis. There are probably people that are dying right now from marijuana use and have no idea that it's happening to them. Let me tell you, CBD. Cannabidiol. People are eating that like candy nowadays, okay? It fries your liver. The one CBD product that's been approved by the FDA, which is a pure CBD, a responsible company, there is an FDA warning that you have to get your liver enzymes monitored because it can damage your liver. And it has not been approved by anybody over the age of 55, okay? Now, that is the most benign CBD product that exists.
And what's it supposed to do for you? What's your trade-off?
Well, it's supposed to help you sleep. It's been touted as probably 20 or 30 different diseases to help you with. The FDA has come out with warning letters to these companies saying, no, you're wrong, that's fraud, that's not true, you're not allowed to say that, stop saying that. A lot of elderly people are using CBD, probably sustaining liver damage, and they don't know to blame it on the CBD.
They're giving it to their pets, too. I mean, there's a whole industry of giving it to their pets.
And
absolutely.
And
women are using it.
And they use it in suppositories and all kinds of good stuff.
They made it weird.
Oh, yeah. And the CBD warning from the FDA says it can cause suicidal ideation. Okay? So people using it for depression are probably going to get more depressed. So this is the kind of stuff that they've been allowed to get away with. Now, why hasn't the FDA been more aggressive about this? Well, here's the problem. The marijuana industry got a law through Congress that the Department of Justice lawyers cannot spend any money contesting any state medical marijuana laws. And so the FDA depends on the DOJ lawyers to go into court and enforce this. By the way, there are criminal penalties for violating FDA laws. We've been trying to get that law changed in Congress. So far, we haven't had any luck. But the marijuana industry was very smart. They started with medical marijuana. If you are opposed to medical marijuana, you are not compassionate. You are a racist. You are blah, 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 blah. You don't want to help these poor kids and all this kind of stuff. And so the government has not had the courage to do anything about this. And this has been through Republican and Democratic administrations. The worst
super ugly.
The Bush administration.
We will, we're going to bring Dave back and keep talking about this, but the news is going to interrupt us. Got to take a quick break. You can find us and information about Dave Evans and the suits he's doing at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
This is actually the second hour. That's what I was supposed to say.
Yeah.
And it's July 7th, 2024. And before our guest, Dave Evans, tells you that he's in some balmy sub-100-degree weather, it's, what is it now, 100 and...
It's 108 right now in Redding, California. We're just, we're like a mile from the sun right now.
We don't need no barbecues here. We just throw our meat out on the sidewalk.
Hey, Dave, I grew up in the Catskills, so I know what 40 degrees below is like in the winter. So the summers are great and the mosquitoes are huge.
I miss it. Not the sweating, though. Do we have a sponsor this hour, Bill?
Yes, we do.
Stepped right over you and started buffoonery.
That's okay. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They handle everything in the way of ag products, tractors, implements, you name it, they've got it. And most of that is in stock. You can go up there and drive one and see how you like it. They also have turf products, which are your riding mowers, handheld equipment. And that's all electric now because we're in California and we're going to clean the planet and we're going to lead the way.
Now we're going to stress the power grid so that when it's 108, we can just use fans.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we can't use those.
No.
Oh, but we still
have hand fans.
They can't take away our hands.
That's right.
There's no hand fan regulation yet.
That's right. So don't go into your local retailer looking for a gas-powered mower because you're probably not going to find one unless it's an older model.
And if you have one, for God's sakes, take care of it.
Yeah, because it has to be built prior to 2024 in order to retail it as new. So most of those products are now spoken for and not available in California. So come in and buy a brand new electric mower. They do a pretty good job. And there are some benefits to electric. Go up and talk to one of our salespeople up there and get all edumacated on that. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226.
But if you have that coveted gas mower, get it in there to have it fixed.
Yeah, we definitely are doing a lot of repairs on the older ones. And, you know, they're still good. They're still legal to run. You just can't buy any more new ones. So go up and see them or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Shazam.
There you go.
Can I talk to Dave about pot now? Please. Hey, Dave, so you and I have been talking. Would you address, I know that we have numerous citizens up in Siskiyou County that live out in the Shasta Vistas, over 8 to 10,000 illegal grows in the most prolific marijuana growing area in the United States. And I know this from visiting most of the states this year, looking at marijuana in other states. We have talked about a class action lawsuit, and I talked to you about that location actually has a historic CCNRs. And any way forward, you think, for the residents up there to potentially sue the state for violation of, for allowing violation of the CCNRs?
Well, the one vehicle that we're now trying to perfect is a RICO lawsuit. That's a federal lawsuit under the Racketeering Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act. And marijuana growing, marijuana selling is considered racketeering under federal law because it violates the Controlled Substances Act. And under RICO, you have a right to sue the marijuana company if you have been damaged in your property or your business. So, for example, we have a RICO lawsuit going right now in New Jersey where a town wanted to put a big marijuana grow operation right next to these people's yard, and that's illegal under federal law, and we're suing under RICO. Now, the advantage of RICO is that you can get triple damages. So, for example, if these people lose, say, $200,000 in value on their home, they can collect $600,000 from the marijuana grow operation, and their attorney's fees can be paid. And that is one option. People could band together in your county and file a RICO lawsuit, that is an option. You can't really sue the governments unless they are really blatantly acting in a criminal manner. Approving these things doesn't meet that level. The reason for this is under the law is that a government agency cannot form criminal intent. Only a person or a private organization can do that. So the RICO lawsuits against governments have not been successful. But you can go after the marijuana companies, and we would certainly do everything we could to support that. We've done a lot of research on RICO. All of our lawsuits that we're doing right now, in a sense, are experimental because we're looking for a legal formula that will work and that we can apply to other states. The legal profession is now just starting to be aware of the damage that marijuana is causing. We now have two big personal injury law firms that are interested in class action lawsuits. We have a firm in California, I would be happy to help anybody that wanted to talk to that law firm about that, or in particular about a personal injury lawsuit as a result of marijuana psychosis, addiction, anything like that. People can contact me in two ways. They can send me an email at seniorcouncil@civel.org. seniorcouncil@civel.org. Or they can call me at 908-963-0254. That's 908-963-0254. I'll be happy to help them out. I would give their case an initial evaluation before I referred it out. We have attorneys in other states that are interested in these lawsuits in New York and other states. And I think within the next couple of years, there's going to be a tsunami of lawsuits against the marijuana industry. They are low-hanging fruit for personal injury lawyers because they've been allowed to get away with reckless, irresponsible behavior, and nobody's been telling them no. And so they've done a lot of stupid things that they can be brought to account for.
Well, you even have the ACLU defending them. The growers up in Siskiyou County are getting away with it. The cartels up there are being affronted by the ACLU claiming racism.
Of course. The ACLU got a big donation to set up a unit, to promote legalization of marijuana. This is not the ACLU that I knew when I was in law school. I was actually at one point an ACLU participating attorney back when they believed in civil rights. They don't believe in that anymore. They believe in drug culture. And I'm very, very disappointed in them. And I've taken on the ACLU when it came to student drug testing, and I won. We got student drug testing in New Jersey, and we opposed the ACLU. ACLU is not—they're not that great as lawyers. That's been my experience with them, we'd be happy to take them on. We do have some funding for the lawsuits. The lawsuit in Lusos, New York are funded. The ones in New Jersey are funded. We have been able to provide some money to Minnesota because there's a case there. Probably people are going to have to go out and find funding, or if they have a good case, an attorney can take it on what's called a contingent basis. In other words, where the attorney does the work for free and only gets paid if they win. Sometimes they will pay the expenses for the lawsuit. I've done that. I've spent as much as, you know, tens of thousands of dollars on litigation. The big law firms are better able to handle that than I am. But, you know, my job is to educate lawyers, to give them the tools so they can hit the ground running, so they can be familiar right away with what's going on. So we have model court complaints that they can use. We have model legal research to defeat motions against the case. We have model demands for documents, model interrogatories. So, you know, this is a lot of the work of litigation is the discovery process, and we have tools available for lawyers in a variety of areas of the law. We have legal memorandums on product liability, server liability. That's another whole issue. These places that serve pot should be treated just like bars. You know, you serve somebody who's intoxicated and they go out and kill somebody in a car crash, you ought to be able to be sued for that if it's marijuana.
Dave, in Shasta County, we have something called the Social Host Ordinance. And
right.
if you are a parent and you hold a party at your house and underage
right.
kids are drinking,
right.
you will be held legally responsible. We don't have it yet for cannabis, but we're working on it.
Well, that's exactly where it should be. And that can be established by legislation, by an ordinance, or by case law. In New Jersey, the alcohol is established by case law. So we have a whole memo on that, you know, how people can detect intoxication and so forth. We have a medical malpractice legal memorandum with model complaints and discovery questions. And we have an environmental lawsuit based on, we've got one specific to California for Proposition 65, how to file a Proposition 65 lawsuit, which any citizen can do. Marijuana smoke has been declared a Proposition 65 carcinogen in California, and citizens can go and file lawsuits there. And we have a model lawsuit prepared for specifically for California. We have a lot of information on the environmental damage. We have issued but Americans Against Legalizing Marijuana has a paper called Water, Wildlife, or Weed, which goes into all the environmental damage. You can get that from their website. That's aalm.info, aalm.info. Look in the upper right-hand corner where you can click and get documents. You'll see Water, Wildlife, or Weed. And the environmental damage is unbelievable in California, unbelievably bad. We can't get anybody out there that's an environmentalist to deal with it. We sent all kinds of information about this to the Audubon Society, to the Sierra Club, and I think that they're all politically liberal, probably pro-marijuana, and they didn't want to deal with it. We gave them proof that it was killing birds.
Dave, we did work with the California DA's Association, and we were able to get all the new environmental laws on the books specifically for marijuana. But it's
wonderful.
It's hard to get them enforced. That's part of the problem.
Yeah,
you know, in these small counties with, you know, minimal resources and just massive illegal grows, it's hard to get at them. We in this county where I live, we have we're not like Siskiyou. We have probably 2,000 illegal grows right now. We conducted 90 eradication operations last year. So look at the numbers.
Great.
We're just overwhelmed. And the state.
Well, you need to publish papers on that. Publish things about it because the rest of the country is not aware of how bad this is. You know, they have this idealized view of marijuana, and they don't see how this whole thing gets completely out of control. And, you know, we're still fighting against marijuana legalization and medical marijuana legalization. And whatever you can do to get the word out to, you know, you guys are the point of the spear there about what's going on. And, you know, this whole argument that legalization reduces the need for law enforcement is a bunch of baloney.
Yeah. You couldn't prove that here.
No. And, you know, certainly we would, you know, want to use you as expert witnesses on this and so forth on it. So I think that the thing about litigation, most of my litigation in my law practice has been against big companies and big law firms. And I'm a sole practitioner. I can go, you can go toe-to-toe with them if you have the proper tools. Their money doesn't count. Because you got to go before a judge, and you have just as much the ability to get stuff before a judge or jury. And I think juries are going to be sympathetic on some of these issues. These homeowners that we have a case in New Jersey, they want to put a huge grow operation right next to their home that they've lived in for 20 years. And they want to put an 8-foot-tall barbed wire fence around the facility. And greenhouses and all this kind of stuff. And
that's fantastic.
They can't sell their house. Nobody will buy it.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's no crime. I'm sure there's no one trying to break in.
Well, that's why and we make that point. We say, why do you need an 8-foot-tall barbed wire fence? It's to stop criminals from breaking into your place. And these people chose that town because it was a nice rural town, and it was a safe environment for their kids and good public schools. And now they're going to have this horrible thing next to their property. And, you know, they went to the owner of the marijuana grow operation, tried to reason with her and say, look, you don't just see what you're doing to us. And, you know, we said, you know, give them some compensation. No, we're not going to do that. That's off the table. Drop dead. And, okay, that's fine. So we're going to court now.
Dave, you know, in California, you're allowed to grow under the medical marijuana law. Now you're allowed to grow 6 plants for personal consumption. A really good grower, and this is what we see out in the field, really good grower can grow, that plant will yield 1 to 5 pounds of marijuana, including shake left over for making honey oil. So when you divide that out into joints, or 1 gram joints, that's 14,000 joints potentially.
Every
39 minutes you'll be smoking a...
This is what's so absurd about this, is that marijuana seems to have this protective shell over it that people do not think critically. And it's been very difficult to pierce that. But tobacco is the same way. Opiates were the same way. You know, the opiate companies...
Hold that thought, Dave, because I really do want to tie these together because it does matter.
Okay.
And the cigarette, opiate, now moving to this, is really a good comparison. You are listening to We the People, and all of the things that we have fired off, like websites and contact information for Dave Evans, is on the site at wethepeopleradio.us.
I got high. I just got a new promotion, but I got high. Now I'm selling dope, and I know why, because I got high, because I got high, because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to court before I got high. I was gonna pay my child support.
Before I got high.
That's what you have to look forward to. That's what they should use for the commercials. Because it's a much more honest portrayal of how it all turns out, except for
Get motivated.
I should have played the cop song after that. That was bad. My bad.
That was good. That's always good.
Yeah, that's always a good one.
So, Dave, up on our website...
But wait, he has to finish. He has to finish because I cut him off at the knees with how this the process has gone with cigarettes, and then with So Big Tobacco, and then the opioids.
The playbook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dave, over to you.
Yeah, that's the playbook that the Marijuana Institute's been using, the tobacco opiate playbook, and we're going to use the counter playbook against them. So, you know, when I was a kid back in the 50s, there were advertisements about how smoking was healthy and to help you lose weight. The opiate industry during the Obama administration got a bill through Congress unanimously. It cost them $12 million to limit the ability of the DEA to go after the opiate situation. And we said at the time, you're going to get an opiate epidemic because of this. We were right. And there were over 1,000 opiate lawsuits, a lot of them from state and local governments who had to pay all the expenses for the opiate addiction. So the same thing is going to happen with marijuana. But people have to step up. We need to get plaintiffs. And we now have very competent law firms that will evaluate the case. We'll help people. We'll help the attorneys get familiar with it. We have a case in Michigan where a young man used marijuana and committed suicide. We've been working with the attorney, helping the attorney get experts, become familiar, how to file a lawsuit, questions to ask, and things like that. So no lawyer is going to have to just step into this without support. We're actively seeking plaintiffs right now. Civil, my organization, has no corporate money. We have no money from any pharmaceutical company. We are funded by families who are concerned about drug problems. All of our services are for free. We don't charge anything. And the only thing we might charge is if a lawyer would ask us to do a lot of research and, you know, it would be a lot of time-consuming work, we might charge the attorney for something. But everything else is free. We'll work with attorneys and educate them and try to get as many cases going as possible. You are in the belly of the beast. You can show the rest of the country what's in store for them unless they do something about this. So your input, your expertise is extremely valuable. You have a great deal of courage for what you're doing, because I know you're doing it at some risk of physical risk to you and your family, and I appreciate that. Everybody that has opposed the marijuana industry at one point or another has gotten threats. I know I have, and I've had to get the state police involved and so forth. So what you're doing is a heroic, patriotic act, and I want to let you know that we all very much appreciate what you're doing. And just let the rest of the country know any way you can. If we can help you write stuff up or get stuff out, we have the ability to issue press releases. We have 4,000 agencies and people on our list for those. We'd be happy to help in any possible way that we can. I look at this this kind of work that will go probably beyond my remaining stay on Earth, but I owe it to the people that fought against tobacco and opiates. I stopped smoking because of what the tobacco people did. Both my parents died from tobacco, and my stopping smoking saved my life. And this is my way of paying them back. So what we're doing is really a public service that will last more than our lives, and it's something we can all be very proud of. I appreciate very much this opportunity. I'm going to have to get off because we have a whole family dinner here, and I'm supposed to be preparing
the hamburgers.
And
they want you to go to it?
Yeah, well, my wife, I told her I'd be available at 4 o'clock, and I know that everybody's sitting down there waiting for me, and my wife has this strange belief that I should participate in family life.
She's like, Dave's talking about pot again. What the heck?
Yeah.
Dave, I want you to know before you go that we're backing you up today on the website.
Great.
You can see the pocket guide for pesticides found in illegal cannabis grow operations.
Wonderful. I'm going to use that in our lawsuit.
Great. Right. Put out by the Department of, okay. of Pesticide, and we really appreciate it. And also, we have a poster up there today, 3 joints
right.
a day for 30 days, what happens to your lungs. And so the public
right.
should go look at that. You're a rock star
yeah.
to us, Dave. And
thanks
and
a lot for all your
you.
Info. We'll,
yep.
We will talk to you again. Have a great time in your balmy sub-zero weather or whatever it is you're having.
Well, I'll think of you tonight when I'm laying there in the cold with a blanket on. It's nice and cool here right
yeah,
now.
We wouldn't know anything about that.
No.
It's a dry heat, though.
We here in the Adirondacks, we do not have air conditioning, and you don't have a need for it in the summer.
If you don't have any here, you're likely a pothead.
We get snow in May here, believe it or not.
Yep.
Right.
But I live in North Carolina, so I'll be going back down there to sweat it out with everybody else. So
nice.
Keep up the great work. It's a great honor and a pleasure to be associated with you. And
thanks, Dave. We appreciate all your hard work.
Stay courageous. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Bye. Thanks, Dave. Bye.
Dave's going to barbecue without going outside. Well, I guess he could go outside if he wants. But.
So he really is a rock star because, you know, most attorneys, unless they see like an instant gratification, like there's money for them waiting right there, they won't touch a case. So he's had to do all this work for years and get organizations behind him like ALM. And ALM is also on your website, the Americans Against Legalization of Marijuana.
I also put up the, As I go to say it, it flips away. Here we go. The risk of marijuana use. I put up the picture of the front page of it, and if you click on it, you get the full PDF.
Awesome.
The pocket guide to pesticides found in illegal cannabis grows. You click on that, you get the whole thing. And then the chemicals that are listed in it, you get the same guide. Those links go to the same place. But I thought if somebody didn't take the time to click on it, the chemical list should, I don't know, you know, malathion, I mean, there's like, I don't even know what some of this stuff, I don't know what most of it is.
It just amazes me that, you know, the rules say that stuff's supposed to be tested, but they get away with that with this bulk testing, and it's not a regular thing. But you go into one of these pot shops and buy marijuana, you don't know what you're smoking, and chances are you're probably ingesting these chemicals and
came from a grow near you.
Yeah, it's organic.
Shazam. And then you run out and you're worried about your grain free and gluten free and all this
organic
stuff.
And all this.
Like,
yeah.
And throw it out the window.
They always throw it back at you. It's a legal business.
It's interesting. We have a dispensary here that is now talking about farm to table. Like that's supposed farm to table. Like that's supposed
it's
to
just
be
like food. It's exactly food.
I have never heard a dispensary here that says, hey, come on out to my farm and take a look at where your product's coming from.
See how we grow it.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about pesticides today, and I'm only going to focus on one. By the way, just some statistics for you, Aaron and Bill. We have 3,159 marijuana dispensaries, legal dispensaries in the state of California.
Wow.
And it is where our youth gets their marijuana. So you'll get somebody who has a medical marijuana card. They'll buy it from there, and they'll take it to the high school. And in 5 minutes in any of our high schools, you can find a person that can get you that marijuana. We have 33. So we have the most dispensaries in the United States of any other state, California by far. We have 3,300 medical marijuana patients registered in the state of California. Amazingly, you know, remember back in 2012, I need my medical marijuana. I remember sitting in a meeting for the city council when they were considering marijuana, and I sat next to a girl 9 months pregnant who just reeked of marijuana, and I just thought, wow, what's going to happen to your baby? So recently, we did a seizure in Siskiyou. So deputies caught a vehicle coming out of the Shasta Vista, stopped it, several hundred pounds of marijuana, and the sheriff up there, Jeremiah LaRue, sent that marijuana in for testing. Guess what? It came back with heavy pesticides and residues. I'm going to talk about one of those pesticides. So in the interview of the suspect, who was you know, really honest. He said, yeah, this is going to a dispensary, and he named it, I won't name it, to a dispensary in L.A. So I'm going to propose to your audience that now 100% of marijuana is tainted in the state of California. It's either tainted with a bacteria, which is very common because of the overproduction of marijuana here, and or it's tainted with some kind of pesticide residue. So one of the pesticides that we found was something called chlorpheniramine, and it's used commercially to control a variety of insects and mites. And it is a multi-system toxicity. It's been previously reported in humans. In humans, chlorpheniramine toxicity leads to a high incidence of mortality, with only two previously reported cases of survival. Now, I ran this pesticide past a chemical engineer who's in our group in Texas, and he came back and he said, you know, it's not just the chlorpheniramine, but it's what happens when chlorpheniramine is heated.
Oh.
So now people are smoking it either in bud or vaping it. And so when heated, its decomposition emits vapors of hydrogen chloride, hydrogen fluoride, and nitrogen oxide. So all of those three have long-term acute exposures. So if you're smoking that three joints a day for 30 days, that's an acute exposure. That's up on your website. You can see what your lungs look like.
It isn't pretty.
Yeah, you're getting lung scarring, skin damage. You can see your fingernail beds start to change colors. You're getting eye exposure where it can cause blindness. You're getting swallowing that can damage your esophagus. You know, back in 2012 when we first started battling marijuana, I used to have potheads come up and tell me, hey, you know, I suffer from emphysema and marijuana smoking actually helps me. And I'm thinking, there's something wrong with you. You got the Darwin Award. The elevator didn't go to the top. How can you possibly put a burn substance into your lungs?
Yeah.
So we have these. This is just one pesticide. You can go and look at the pesticide guide on the website and see what other pesticides are going in there.
Yeah. 63 years of asthma, and not one doctor has ever told me I should go smoke something.
Well, when you were up at the Grows, what, last year? Or a year before, and you saw barrels of this stuff.
I like the spray adhesive. I couldn't possibly tell you what it's called because it looks like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
And we traced that, Aaron, to a chemical house in New York and then out of Brazil. So it was methacrylate, which is...
Oh, it was much longer. The name on the barrel was...
Yeah, it was
like,
longer than that.
Yeah. It was
like
the secret, dimethyl, the
blah,
secret
blah, blah, blah.
Chemical name. And so when we tracked it all down, it's like spray adhesive to get the pollen to stick on the plants better so that the buds would grow faster, bigger, so they could harvest more cycles of grows. And it's like, okay.
That was the illegitimate use. The legitimate use of that.
What do you do with spray adhesive?
Yeah,
it's
actually used as a coating on glasses to hold the UV colorants on glasses.
Huh.
So, but it's not meant
that's
for...
That's hot information. Yeah, but don't smoke your glasses. It's
not
a
meant
bad
for
idea.
Human consumption.
Consumption, yeah, exactly.
All right, we have to take a quick break, and then we will be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Got a $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot. I got a $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, but it's all going to pot.
Yes, the marijuana industry, the musical.
So I think if people want to know locally what kind of effect this is having upon us, we can only look to a recent operation that was in the Lakehead area. And for security, I'm not going to give the actual street that it was on. But there were a group of people up there that were working on the trout restoration project in the Salt Creek area. And they've been working on this for 3 years. And they had a large-scale marijuana grow up there. And they were stealing water out of Salt Creek and then dumping all their chemicals, which includes, you know, since these are off-grid operations, they keep their batteries cold by putting them in the stream, and the batteries, and they have lots of batteries. And when they die, they just leave them there, and then all that sulfuric acid is leaking into the water, and then all their chemicals that are in the pesticide residue pamphlet that I put on, that you put on your website, those all go into that stream. And then downstream from there, that goes into Shasta Lake. But before it does, it becomes the drinking water, the well water, for numerous users downstream. So the operation was done. Sheriff Johnson gave it a very high priority, said get up there and take care of it, and the team went and did that. So how does this
work? This is being done under the auspice of a trout restoration program?
No. The victim in this case was actually doing a trout restoration program and found this grow.
Oh, okay.
This grow was at a dead end of a dead end road, and that's how the pot folks do it. They go to a very barren location where nobody's going to be around. They ended up having a house that was used for a processing operation. So they were processing the marijuana right there, they can make the honey oil, they can process all the bud, and that was all being done. So they got a couple hundred pounds of bud. Usually in these operations, usually there'll be weapons. The suspects run off. They're usually Hispanic. They run off, and our deputies don't chase them for good reason, because, one, you're going to get deputies hurt. Two, it's a misdemeanor. Whether you grow 5 plants or 5 million plants in the state of California, it's just a misdemeanor. So we're not going to have our deputies go and get hurt for just a misdemeanor.
But the pollution and all that's not a misdemeanor, is it?
So what happens with that is a case gets written up, and then it gets, and here's where we have a log jam. A case will get written up, and it will go to the district attorney. The district attorney will say, well, it's misdemeanor, I'm not going to file. But there's environmental crimes. Now,
right.
Now recently, a change this year, which is an important change, our district attorney has now assigned a DA investigator to the team. So we have a DA investigator.
That's helpful.
That is very helpful, because they can file the environmental crimes. Also, along with that, these cases go to Department of Resource Management. Now, that's under Paul Hellman. And there has been a disconnect there, and something that we're going to work on this year. We've got to get code enforcement back into the operation here, because they're the ones that can go out and they can shut down properties. They are the ones that can then refer them to our county council, and there are 2 cases in front of our county council, which he's done nothing with so far, that are there for the, and we have an ordinance, initial violation, $10,000 a day until the location is cleaned up, or $20,000 a day if it's a repeat violation. So we could be, if we wanted to, this county could be making millions of dollars on fines. Now, would we be able to recover them all, Aaron? No. We may end up being the owners of these properties.
I was going to say,
you got property seizure laws that could kick into effect. Now, are they on this particular operation you're talking about?
Yep.
There's obviously property owners that are involved, and
right.
Do we know who they are?
So what happens is there lots of times they'll be out of town property owners, or they'll do title flipping. So it'll be very hard for us to find out.
Or they just keep rolling it.
They keep rolling it, but. That's what code enforcement is there for. That's not the sheriff to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's code enforcement. So there's the disconnect. We're going to work with code enforcement this year. We've got to get them back into the, bring them back into the fold that this is a serious problem. Now, recently, our board of supervisors, they really got upset about illegal aliens in our community. And they found 100 illegal what they thought were illegal aliens on a bus at Winco parking lot. Right, Patrick Jones was so upset. Patrick, if you're listening to this, how about 3 to 5 growers per grow, and we have 2,000 grows. How many illegal alien criminals do we have in this community?
Yeah, every community
easily go after, right? Just by using the fine and make them go elsewhere. That. We don't have to arrest them. We don't have to make it a big deal. Bingo. They'll go elsewhere if they don't, can't get
well,
the water.
The sheriff in Modoc County, when I spoke with him, and they had basically no problems with all this, it's like, wait, what? They took a really hard line at the beginning. In fairness, their weather is super severe. They are not on a they're not in a good place for having supplies trucked to them. They're not on a major artery of a highway. So they have a lot of things kind of working in their favor. But they took a really hard stance, and they were they didn't allow it to get going. Unfortunately, in Siskiyou County, way back when it started, there was sort of a, well, you know, we can work with these people, and we'll help them get into compliance, and we'll, you know, that'll work out. We'll have meetings, and they're going to work with us. So anybody in some other county or state or wherever the heck you are, if the lingo that you're hearing, the strategy that you're hearing from your sheriff's office, from your county offices,
yeah,
is like, you know what, we're going to help these people get into compliance because this is a really good revenue source for taxes, and so, you know, we're going to allow the commercial stuff and just we're going to regulate it. Bottom line, look at the pictures on our website. That's what happens when you have it all regulated. It's a train wreck.
Wasn't there a reversal up in Humboldt County on a lot of that, where they allowed the commercial grows, and now they're,
yeah, now it's,
they're
like,
kind of backpedaling a little bit.
Well, what is it? Nevada County has, I don't even know how many illegal grows, because you really don't know, but 1% of them, they estimate 1% of them are legal. So, I mean,
yeah,
how silly is that?
The only thing I would say is that the typical, we're failing in California as far as commercial marijuana because,
yeah,
of the overabundance of illegal marijuana. And now we have all these other states starting to come online. Oklahoma, you know, huge.
Those poor guys. Chinese. They kind of pointed the gun at their face and pulled the trigger. Huh?
How about Maine, Aaron? In the middle of the snow, they're overtaken by the Chinese growers up there now. Alaska is one of the highest growing states in the union now.
You're kidding.
No, they have more indoor grows in Alaska than anywhere else in the United States.
Really?
Indoor.
But you would think that would be incredibly expensive, since they would have to run, I mean,
Aaron,
heaters and lights.
One plant, $1,000.
That's true.
One plant, $1,000, okay?
Yeah.
You can get a typical grow is 250 plants in a hoop.
I'd be a terrible drug dealer. I forgot to do the math at the beginning.
I just sent you a picture, as a matter of fact, and for your, so the public know. I called it the Super Grow. These are football field size grows you can drive tractor trailers in, folks. These are not your typical, you know, single row hoop house. These things are absolutely massive. And there is one of them here locally. And it's going to get eradicated here real soon.
Well, this ability to get down to who owns it, you know, instead of just the growers that run away, right? You know, the people on the ground doing the groundwork. How successful have they been able to be finding, you know, who's kind of orchestrating the whole thing and peeling those people off the rolls, putting them in jail, that sort of thing?
Honestly, I think it's just trying to stem the flow right now, that the ability to follow up, because that takes a full investigation and investigator, and that's why it's got to be code enforcement. You know, they have to assign somebody to do that, and they'll say they don't have the money, but this could actually be money generating for our county. Now, government isn't supposed to generate money through fines generally, but here, the fines are so massive. Do you know if we assess fines in just one grow, that could pay for the administrative law judge for the entire year? We could be banging those cases out every month. It's not like the cases aren't available.
Well, and so for the people out there, you know, screaming at their radio, going, well, what about me? And that's, I guess, the big thing that I look at is if any, like, just regular citizen, person owns a house, has some acreage, went and dumped pesticides into a creek, siphoned water out of a creek, went and dug giant holes, went and scraped down the earth, you know, cut down all their trees. If they did any of those things, well, if any of those things even were partially done, they wind up just absolutely hung out to dry.
Well, let's talk about Mill Creek, because the sheriff was very successful doing operations in Mill Creek, basically went in there and wiped them out. Now, this year, there's two new operations in there, but two as opposed to, like, I don't know, there was 20 or 30 in there before. And they had a commercial water pump down in Mill Creek that was pulling water out, and you could see black poly pipe going to all these different grows. Can the sheriff go back and follow up on that water pump? No, he can't. He just doesn't have the personnel to do that. That's a code enforcement issue, because code enforcement can really put the hurting on the property owners up there. And it's not like we don't up there. We know who the property owners are up there.
Oh, that's cool.
These properties are being rented. As a matter of fact, I just saw someone from Siskiyou advertising a property in Mill Creek for rent for the year, you know, $20,000 to $40,000, you know, and they don't say for marijuana grows, they just say water on site, good growing medium. Well, yeah, that's code word for come grow your marijuana.
No housing,
no permits to worry about.
Right. You don't have the septic checking and the fire insurance and the, you don't have any of those things.
So the one thing that's good about our sheriff is we get destruction warrants. So in the destruction warrants, they go through these hoop houses with a skid steer, and they knock them down. And some of these hoop houses are beautiful. They're $100,000 aluminum frame commercial hoop houses.
Size. Give people a...
Typically 100 by 250. Yeah. That's a typical hoop house.
That's a huge grow house.
Can you imagine if you were going to grow, I'm going to have a little garden, and I'm going to put up 100 by 200... You can grow vegetables for your old
Any town. Citizen can go on Google Maps and just go to an area like Lack Creek, or how about, let's go Round Mountain, south of Highway 299. You can see the massive marijuana grows. And the team, our team, is highly motivated, very experienced now. They have some of the most experienced investigators in the United States. Their morale is excellent. We're paying for it through overtime, but the sheriff is going after DCEP money, which is the drug enforcement money that we get from the feds. So we're doing okay there, but we could always use more, and we definitely could use more personnel. The hot areas this year in Shasta County are, Veterans Cemetery area, which is generally taken care of by Department of Fish and Wildlife. They like to work the west side. On the east side is Round Mountain, that whole Montgomery Creek, that whole area up in there. It's starting to look like Little Siskiyou, and the team is going to hit it hard.
Have you got any numbers on, you take one of those big grow houses, the amount of revenue that's generated from, one crop that comes out of that?
So that super grow I was talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a several million dollar harvest. And they can do that four times a year.
Yeah. So $100,000 for a greenhouse.
Oh, easy.
Drop in the bucket.
Drop in the bucket.
They just turn around and build another one.
Yeah.
Because there's so much money involved.
Yes.
And that's the problem with this industry, is that money, we had a comment on the chat that some companies take money from the industry. Well, lots of businesses may not even know it, but they take money from the industry. There's so much money floating around buying. I think you mentioned up in Siskiyou, the tractor supply up there sold more PVC pipe.
They were the highest, not just with that, but with everything, you know, water tanks and soil and all these different things.
Than any tractor supply in the country.
It was one of the top grossing stores. And then you have some of the people who sell all the soils and all that stuff.
Sure.
And they were trucking it in with 18-wheelers. I mean, there was just...
It was a financial boom
for some of these areas. And so then everybody doesn't want to say anything. What, the one guy up there, $13 million selling water? You can farm, or you can sell get $13 million for your water. Not sure I'd want to be in partners with the cartel, but...
And he's selling it back selling it today.
Of course he is.
I walked into a business, this was a couple of years ago,
over
in Humboldt.
We're done.
Oh, okay.
I'll have to save
that story.
All right. Got to go.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. You can find everything at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.